following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Boone Podcast.
If I get three pairs of shoes from a collective 14 gifts, I'm good.
On today's program, we flip the script on Booney.
With 141, his second home run in as many nights and his 37th of the year.
Today, we stick him under the lights and shove a mic in his face.
And I mean, we're flying through these tree-lined trails going 1,000 miles an hour.
He is CBS Sports Radio host and the executive producer of the Boone Podcast, Rich Herrera.
I want to know about you guys. What was life like growing up around your dad while he was playing when you guys were younger?
Now, in its fourth year, this is the one and only Rhett Boone Podcast.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Turning 2 with Booney. I'm Rich Herrera for the Xfinity Sports Network. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Rhett Boone, hello. Happy, second week of the season, right?
Yeah, happy second week of the season. Oh, it's Masters Week, Rich. Masters Week. Happy
is that what it is?
Masters Week. Oh, yeah.
Happy this Masters Week to you then. Okay. Have you played Augusta?
I haven't, and I'm oof.
How have you
It's on my list. I know. I don't know. You know, I tell the story all the time. My buddies are like, what are you thinking? When I was in Atlanta, I got asked to play. I got invited to play several times, and I didn't.
What's wrong with you?
Because just like when you're young and, you know, it's like,
I'm going to get invited to play all the time.
Right. It's like winning a World Series. You go to the world. I'll have plenty more times in my life to do that. And then you realize how hard it is. Augusta right now, still on my bucket list. I will get there, but no, I have not played Augusta.
All right. How would you get there?
What do you mean? I get invited.
How would you finagle an entree into Augusta?
I'm not going to finagle. It will happen organically one day. I'll be at some event somewhere, somehow. I'll be with an Augusta member. I'll be like, you should come out and play. I say, you bet your butt. You tell me when and where, and I will be there. It's the one place.
Like Masters to play Augusta just falls out of the sky. Ooh, look.
Just the one. It's the one place I haven't got to play that I really have wanted to. Hopefully we're going to Pine Valley, which is number one in the world. Coming up in May or June.
Where's Pine Valley? Remind me.
New Jersey. Okay. It's tremendous. But Augusta,
it's in the world.
In the world. Cypress Point. Yeah, it's private.
Okay.
It's like Augusta. Augusta, though, I played Cypress
Point. Like Augusta, Boone.
I played Cypress Point, which is one of those elusive, tough to get on course. I played that a bunch. But Augusta at the end of the day is Augusta. You're correct. And it's the one kind of, I don't know. It's that one. One day, Aaron got to play it. My brother got to play it about this offseason. They invited him and Dave Roberts because they were World Series managers last year. And they got to play. So, yeah, he's got that on me now, too. He's got that. He's played Augusta, and I haven't. But, yeah, I love this tournament, Rich. I love all the majors. All the majors when the big boys get it rolling. It's kind of right up my alley. I love watching.
How do you wake up in the morning, look yourself in the mirror, knowing that Arnie has played Augusta and you haven't?
Yeah, it's part of the gig. He's big time. Yankee skipper. It has its perks.
I need to take this telephone. Arnie, can I come over and do your show because you played Augusta and Brett hasn't? Okay, I'm gonna see if I can swap Boone Brothers.
Yeah, he doesn't.
How can I work with how do I show up and do this podcast with you knowing that you've never played Augusta? It's a little embarrassing.
It's a little my buddy Ernie, he played it recently.
What?
I've got a lot of guys that have played it that I haven't. I have not. Poor Brett.
I know. If someone could take pity upon him and take him to Augusta, we'd appreciate it.
That's right. We need it.
Who do you like this weekend at the Masters?
I like, I was on a show earlier today.
Right.
And they asked me this question. I like DeChambeau. I just think.
He's so relaxed now that he's playing LIV.
He's a phenomenal story. And I think it came through social media the way his personality really came out. But I mean, you go back before LIV was a thing. DeChambeau was kind of that guy that nobody liked on the tour. The fans didn't like him. He was a little weird, a little awkward, always a good player, ripped it off the tee. But all of a sudden, he goes to LIV. And as you know, when they made that when Liv started picking off PGA Tour players, none of the PGA Tour players that went to Liv got more popular with the fans.
Except for
DeChambeau. He went from kind of a guy that wasn't liked on tour to this transformation I've seen of him and his personality. And I like watching him too. He goes to Liv. He's the only guy that got more popular going to Liv, and everybody wants him back. And I'm telling you, since the Tiger phenomenon, you know, obviously Scheffler's unbelievable, probably the greatest player in the world right now. All the great tour players. But there's something about DeChambeau when he's in the tournament on the weekend. I'm not going to say it's Tiger-esque because I don't think I've ever – we'll probably never see anything again that was Tiger at his peak.
But
I think it's the closest thing now when DeChambeau's in the hunt on a Saturday, on a Sunday. It's just something about him, his personality, the way he's hitting it 350 off the tee. There's something to it. It's kind of like it's a DeChambeau army, and I think it's good for the game. I think it's really good for the game, and I'm just impressed that how he's completely changed the way people look at him in a 5-year period, and I kind of like him, so I'm picking him to win this week.
Give me a baseball comp of a player that people didn't like. You love him on your team, but you hate him on the other team.
Well, there was a lot of guys like that. You know,
were you
AJ Pierzynski is the guy that everybody points to. I really liked AJ. I went on some trips with him, but as an opponent, without knowing him personally, he had that way about him that you didn't like.
Right.
And then and he had that reputation. I think he liked having that reputation.
Playing
the villain, but I'd have to tell people that on my team that didn't know AJ, oh, I can't stand it. That Pierzynski guy, I kind of smile. Go, actually, I kind of like him. I went on a Nike trip and he's kind of cool. I don't think there were a lot of guys like that. I think early in my career, I was like that.
You're probably one of those guys.
As time goes on, though, you meet and you have enough interaction with your peers throughout the league, and then they find out what kind of a guy you are. And then maybe they hate you more. No, I'm kidding. I don't think I've ever seen a transformation like DeChambeau with just his brand, just his being. Right. I don't think I've ever seen that in sports when people went from hating you to absolutely loving you, and everybody's pulling for him now.
You're 100% right. He's a kid from the Valley. He went to Clovis High School. Then went on to play college. I didn't like him on tour because he was just kind of a jerk. And now you look at him.
Ever since he took the Payne Stewart hat off and started wearing regular hats, people started liking him.
Yeah, stop stealing someone else's swagger. Just be yourself.
Yeah, he's great.
All right, so what other baseball
players? He's really good.
No, he's excellent. I think AJ falls in that category. Brett Boone at one time could have fallen into that category, right?
Sure, from an opponent that looking at you on the other side of the field. Yeah, sure.
Bang, sure.
There's a lot of guys. You know, one of my favorite men in the world, and I have a lot of favorites, but this guy's still to this day, and it's not like we catch up once a week or anything like that. We see each other when we see each other, but Darren Erstad, he's a guy that rubbed me wrong. I couldn't stand him.
Nebraska again, football punter.
I went on a Nike tour trip with him. Darren Erstad became one of my best friends and one of my favorite guys in life. To this day, he is. I get a text from Darren. It makes me smile just thinking about him in Nebraska doing his thing. So he might have had a little bit of that. I don't know. There were a lot of guys that were, you know, they had that bad boy or the jerk kind of feeling about him, and then you get to know him. And 9 times out of 10, I found this throughout my career. The guys that I couldn't stand from the visiting dugout, and I didn't know, I've never shook hands with, but I just couldn't stand them. I'd meet them somewhere in the off season, and it every time it seemed like it's like, gosh, dang it, I kind of like him. So especially I didn't like meeting pitchers that I couldn't stand. I felt it gave them an edge when I'd play against them. But I'd say 9 times out of 10, my intuition, my thoughts on what he was like on the opponent side, I was wrong. So I later in my life, when somebody would rub me wrong, I didn't like him. I'd say, I'd probably like him if I met him. Once in a while, you come across a guy that's exactly what I thought he was like. But that was in the minority of my experiences.
Okay, what about the I got a question. I got one for you. Ready?
Oh, I'm ready, Rich.
When you joined the Atlanta Braves, and now you got Glavin, Smoltz, and Maddux. Maddux, Glavin, Smoltz, however you want to put it.
Right.
When you got a chance to be with those guys every day, what was that transformation like?
Well, I never hated the
Braves. I know, but you didn't want to face them.
Well, I didn't want to face because I respected how good they were.
Right. But no, you join them.
No, believe me, when I got traded, the first thing that went in my mind wasn't I'm going to a great organization. I'm going to a winning organization. It was the 90s where they're going to postseason every year. I got to go to a World Series with them. My first thought wasn't any of those things. My first thought was, oh, thank God, I don't have to face Maddux, Smoltz, and Glavin. That's the first thing I thought of. And Maddux let me know, you know, we were partners that year. We rode to the ballpark every day together. He let me know. He go, Booney, aren't you glad you're on my team? Because my stats were very frugal. Or not frugal, that's not the word. Tired. They were tired. Maddux owned me. Early. I got him a little bit late.
Why did you guys drive to the ballpark together?
We lived in the same neighborhood.
So who drove?
Either one of us. And then, you know, our wives became friends and they, you know, they'd come to the ballpark maybe together. So we wouldn't have 18 cars at the ballpark.
Wow. Hey, look, there's Brett Boone saving gasoline in the environment. So now we know Booney carpooled to work and, he comes out here.
Absolutely.
What's interesting? How cool is it playing behind them and watching other batters get frustrated?
No, it's great. It's kind of like early in my career. Well, no, it's different. It's kind of apples and oranges. Both of these scenarios are some of the greatest pitchers I've ever seen. But when I was coming up with the Mariners, my first couple of years in the big leagues, I played with Randy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And different experience, though. But all four of that we're discussing right now, Hall of Fame, first ballot, no question about it. Randy, when I played behind him, if he had his stuff that night, most dominating pitcher I've ever seen. Didn't matter if you're right-handed, left-handed, it didn't matter if it was the all-star lineup. If Randy was on, it seemed like you had no chance. I felt better playing defense behind Randy Johnson on a night where I knew he had it than anyone I've ever seen. Maddux, Smoltz, Glavin, you just know what you were going to get. There weren't going to be a lot of walks. There was going to be a lot of strikes. And Smoltz, for that year, if I remember correctly, had some arm issues and was in and out of the rotation. I think that's maybe when he started going to the bullpen a little bit.
Okay.
And working as a closer. But yeah, Maddux, Smoltz, Glavin for years. And I've documented many times on this podcast. It was before the internet. It was before these smartphones, and it was the USA Today, and it was slipped under my door in Pittsburgh. And I'd start looking through it and looking at the stats, see how everybody did from the night before. And then all of a sudden in the back of my mind, I thought, we got a trip to Atlanta coming up. So I'm going to start the process and the counting process. I know they pitch every fifth day. Okay. Boom. It's Tuesday, the 4th. And let's see, when do we go to Atlanta on the 13th? Okay, who pitched last night? Okay, who's pitching tonight? Who's pitching tomorrow? Okay, that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Maddux. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, no, Maddux, Smoltz, Glavin. Every time I'd go to Atlanta. And I always tease, you know, a friend of mine is, and a great pitcher in his own right, was Kent Merker.
Right.
Denny Nagel, who I got traded for later. Those were the famous fourth starters. Steve Avery was the starter behind those guys for years, and they were no slouches.
Right.
But when it came to Maddux, Smoltz, and Glavin, it was just a different level, and you'd be pulling for those guys. Please give me Denny Nagel, who on any other staff would be a number one.
Would be number one.
Please give me Kent Merker, who on any other staff would be a top of the rotation guy. But that's just how it was. So, yes. Long story short, and this has been a way longer story than
This is a great story. Stop it.
Playing behind him, hell of a lot better and easier on my brain than playing against them.
Okay, so playing behind them. Randy Johnson, a lot of ball. Did a lot of balls get put into play?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't
seen.
When he had his stuff, he was just overpowering. I've never seen that level of dominance. And you'd get that coming back from the opponent, you know, BP the next day, getting ready, stretching, you know, you interact with the other team a little bit. That was Randy last night. And they just give you that look like, how do you think it was? You know,
smart
ass. For most of my career, I had to face Randy, and it was everything it was built up to be. I mean, when he had his stuff, people just think he was this 6'10", throwing 100. Yeah, all that's true. But he was a pitcher. I mean, that sucker wasn't just heaving it. He was painting. He was front dooring two seamers to the righties. He was throwing you 3-0, 3-1 breaking balls with nobody on, nobody out in a 6-run game, which is almost unfair, and dropping it in for a strike. He wasn't just giving in like, oh, I got a 6-run lead. Let me just lay a heater in there, even though it's going to be 98, 99 in a 3-1 count. No, he knows he can flip this slider, and he wanted to hurt you. He wanted to embarrass you, and he did that to a lot of people, myself included, on a few occasions.
When you pitch behind the big three in Atlanta, a lot of times they pitch to contact. So what would you rather have, a dominating strikeout pitcher like Randy when he's on, he's going to get double-digit Ks? Or did you want to play behind a guy who is going to let the ball be put in play and you're going to be able to flash some leather?
I want to play behind a guy that wins. It doesn't matter to me. You know, of course, as a defender, we want to be out there as little as possible, get back into hitting. So I like guys that work quick, that get through strikes. And all these guys did. All these guys didn't have a walk problem. So everybody was throwing strikes. Maddux would pitch to contact more than everybody.
Smoltz was getting at.
Smoltz was more of the power, you know, the power pitcher, the bow you away fastball, strikeout guy. But the other two, they could strike you out if they needed to. Maddux and Glavine were more, they were artists, and it was more of, my job is to get you out, and if I need to strike you out, I have that weapon that I'll pull out too. But I don't need to use it all the time.
Right.
And Maddux and Glavine were depending on where they were in the order, they'd think, well, I can use two pitches here for this at bat, and I can get a ground ball, or I can use seven and punch you out if I have to. So they had that weapon where they were just kind of unconventional. They were different from the right, one from the right side, one from the left side, different than most pitchers that I faced throughout my career.
Do you remember who was your catcher?
I didn't have a catcher.
No, when you were in Atlanta.
Eddie Perez.
Eddie Perez.
Javi Lopez was hurt that year.
Okay. I saw this video of Eduardo Perez, and it was he was talking about playing against the Astros. And
I've seen that, but it makes no sense to me, that argument.
Okay. So explain to people what I'm talking about. So I'll do it. So they're playing against the Astros, right?
Right.
And
it was a Bagwell story.
It's a Bagwell story. So Bags is up there and they're up by big. They're up big and Maddux grooves one. He hits it. It's bomb. And Eddie's like, what are you doing? He goes, don't worry. 3 months later, same situation. Bagwell's looking for that same pitch to drive, and Maddux throws three other pitches. 1, 2, 3. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. Sit down. And he tells Eddie Perez, I told you we'd face him in that situation again.
Yeah, but it makes no sense. Okay.
He said
Bagwell, one of the better hitters, one of the better baseball players I've ever seen.
Because there's video of Maddux saying, I told you so.
No, I don't buy it. You know why?
Why?
If he threw Bagwell a 3-1 two-seamer, Bagwell hits a home run. In that same situation, 3 months later, Bagwell remembers, I heard him on this pitch. He's probably going to go to something else. So it makes no sense. If you throw me a 2-0 heater down the middle, I hit one off the facade. Do you think next time I get in that same situation, I'm going to go, he remembers what I did. He's going to throw me something else. That's going to be my approach as a hitter, which would be Bagwell's approach as a hitter. So I love Eddie Perez. I love the whole setup of that story, but I don't buy it.
And I need Eddie to come on the podcast because I want to hear this.
Yeah, I don't think it's a real story. It's like the John Olerud helmet thing. It's nice.
Come on, don't tell me that's not true.
It's not true. Just because it's a great story and I love it.
Ricky's standing here at first base.
Yeah.
Ricky played with a guy who had a helmet. Wore a helmet like that.
Not true.
Ricky, we played together. Ricky played. I know. I wish Olerud wouldn't have told us that's not a real story.
He told me back in the day, because I loved it. I said, Johnny, that's the greatest story I've ever heard. And he just kind of looked at me, and only the way Big Rude can look at you. And he says, Booney, you know, I hate to break your bubble because it is a great story. I said, what are you saying? He goes, never happened. I said, no. He said, yeah, never happened.
That would have been that. He should have just kept going with it. It could have been an urban myth.
Yeah.
Did you know Ricky Anderson that well? Were you around him at all?
I knew Ricky after we were done playing when I worked for the A's. And I think 15 or 14 or 16, I was a special assistant. He was a special assistant. We were together in spring training. We were together in instructional ball. And all the thoughts – he's a perfect example for me. Young player, I see Ricky Henderson. I know he's a star – at the time, greatest leadoff hitter of all time, maybe still, but he had that way about him. And I just looked at him across the field and I just thought I couldn't stand him. Talked to Trevor Hoffman years later. And Trev loves, you know, Trev doesn't have anything bad. Usually he doesn't have anything bad to say about anybody, but he'll let you know if he doesn't like it, somebody he'll kind of remain quiet about it. Or he'll remain quiet. He just won't say anything. It's kind of a Bob Boone thing. But I brought up Ricky. I said, what was Ricky like? And he goes, Booney, I'll tell you to this day, he's one of my favorite teammates I've ever had. And for Trevor to say that, I kind of listened. And then I got to spend time with him, both of us being special assistants. Absolutely tremendous. Love him. And rest in peace, Ricky. I never got to get him on the show.
I wish
we could. All that charisma,
that swagger,
that sweat, it was wrapped in a package. Kind man.
Yes.
Good guy. And my brief time with him, I really enjoyed it. Just, I look forward to coming into the coach's room in the morning and just having 15 minutes and Ricky and I'd have a coffee and just kind of sit and talk about the day, and it was really, really good. Good dude.
Would he speak in the third person?
A little bit.
A little bit. It's exaggerated.
At that stage of his career, he's kind of known for it.
Right.
And that's kind of what he's famous for. So he'd give you a little, if there was an audience there, he'd give you a little Ricky.
Yeah.
But it was more of with a wink, wink, hush, hush, just kind of a funny moment for him to use it because he knew people expected it.
And I don't know if I ever told you this. I went to his first game. I went to his big league debut.
Did you?
He left me tickets that night. My dad had a friend, a coworker, and her sister lived in Ogden, Utah. And they were the host family for Ricky. So when he got to the big leagues, he left tickets for her and she took me as a little kid. So I saw Ricky's very, very first game. And then I got to be around Ricky one of his returning trips back to Oakland when I worked for the Oakland A's. I mean, you just see him. He was probably the most unique baseball player I've ever seen. I wasn't around Bo Jackson, but I got to imagine Bo would be unique like that. And Ricky was just different.
Yeah. A beast.
Yeah.
Really, really just great.
You know who's a beast right now?
Who?
Somebody we talked about last week and questioned what was going on with the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, Devers.
Rafael Devers. Hey, for all you haters out there, I got two words for you. I can't say them on the podcast. This isn't the radio, but I won't. But you know what I'm talking about. Rafael Devers, who was getting killed the first week in Boston. Hey, Brett, I guess he remembered that he knows how to hit.
Yeah, and I just had Papelbon on the podcast on Tuesday. And Papelbon was a little critical of Devers coming out of camp and his frame and his maybe his question, his in shape, which is That's what happens with guys. If you're a fat ass and you're playing good, nobody says
why a word. Why do you say the word fat ass and you immediately look at me?
But if you're a fat ass and you're not playing good, that's because you're a fat ass. And that's life,
I guess. And again, he looks back at me, folks.
But here's the thing about Devers is, and here's my thought, whatever happened. Because he went 0 for 19, then he went 10 for 19, his next night, 10 for his next 19. And I'm watching him the other day. They had a doubleheader a few days ago. And they won game one, and then he comes out game two, and I start watching him. Because, you know, I know we're going to have to talk about Devers, and I want to put my eyes on that Boston team because I picked them to win the division, and I just wanted to watch them. They're really good. But Devers is just cutting and a slashing and hitting balls line to line and just hitting bullets. And a week earlier, they're throwing heaters right down the middle. He's swinging and missing them. And I was thinking, he struck out 15 times in his first 19 at-bats. It's tough to do if you're anybody. Even if you're the 26th man on the roster,
right? We talked,
but especially about that. For an accomplished of a hitter, Rafael Devers is, something's off, and I just, you know, I think he's still a young player. I think everything that happened this offseason, he didn't like the way it went down. He was the third baseman in Boston. He's a $300 million guy in Boston, and now all of a sudden there's this big adjustment where he's going to be the designated hitter, which is not an easy.
No, it's not an easy.
No, but from what I've heard, though, you know, and as athletes, we all tend to pout at times, especially when we're in our heyday and we are the guy, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, I couldn't imagine if they came into me one day at my prime and said, hey, we're going to move you over here and somebody else going to play second base. What'd you just say? Because we all have that ego in it. And I was talking to Papelbon about it. Ass. We do. Edgar Martinez is my example. I use him as an example a lot because I played so many games with him. But he told me the story. He said when he got asked, because when I came up, Edgar was a third baseman. And then slowly they asked him to be the designated hitter. He was very against the idea, hated it. He resisted it. And he said, until I really embraced being a designated hitter and found a way to do it, he said, man, I was angry, upset. My feelings were hurt.
Insulted.
And I think Rafael Devers went through that little bit of a mourning period. Like, my feelings are hurt. What are they doing bringing in Bregman, even though he knows Bregman's a really good player and going to help that team? And I think he went through that those 19 at-bats and just thought, all right, how much more am I going to pout? Because as hitters, we don't like being embarrassed. And he was being embarrassed.
Right.
How much longer am I going to pout, or am I going to just embrace this and go with it? I think he's embraced it now, Rich. And I think he's finally gotten to the point where, all right. And I think it behind the scenes, I think you had some guys talking to him. I think he really does have a really good relationship with Alex Cora, their skipper. But I think guys like Big Poppy came in and talked to him and said, mm-hmm. Hey, here's what I did when they told me I wasn't going to play first base anymore. And that kind of puts things into perspective if you're looking at a guy like him and think, wow, it worked out pretty good for him. You know, I could be, because there are some comparisons to Devers, his swing.
Right.
And hey, that's a pretty good guy giving you advice. And then you kind of running the tape and thinking, wow, if I leave here and I have the legacy that Ortiz left in Boston, that's pretty good. So maybe I'm not saying I know, I wasn't there. I didn't have the talk with him, but it makes sense to a guy like that coming to you.
You told me this. You look up on the scoreboard and you see your batting average. It's not good. You want to crawl.
Embarrassing.
You crawl in a hole.
It's embarrassing. When you strike out that many times in your first week of the season, that's embarrassing. And the one thing as hitters we don't like, we can put up with going over, not getting a hit. But we hate being embarrassed. And he was being embarrassed, and all of a sudden he's kind of turned the tide, and he's got that team. They won five in a row, and he's been in the middle of all those wins.
And you know, those pitchers, they see them struggling. They're going to take advantage as much as they can.
Yeah.
Embarrass him. 100%. Yeah. That's why you hate pitchers, right?
I can't stand them.
What else do you want to get into today? We talk about the Final Four. We could talk about White Lotus, or we could talk about my shoes.
Ooh, well, let's leave your shoes for last. You can kind of put them up on the screen, but What'd you think? I know White Lotus is big.
I'm not watching it. You got to explain this whole thing to me.
Oh, well, you got to be a White Lotus guy. You had to watch the other seasons to know. White Lotus is very. I would say a lot of the listeners watch White Lotus. If you're an American, well, not even American. If you have a Netflix app on your phone. You should be watching White Lotus now. I mean, it's from the kids, the young. My kids are all watching White Lotus. My mom the other night
is watching
White Lotus. She's like, "Oh, are you going to watch the finale of White Lotus?" I said, "Absolutely."
What's it about?
I can't even explain it if you haven't watched it. It's
the premise.
Each year it's a different resort that they go to. I think they went to Hawaii the first time. Second time they were maybe in France. And then where were they for this one?
So you go to a resort, and what happens?
There's different storylines. So it's like, all right, this particular one. They had a family of five.
Okay.
And they're well-to-do from North Carolina. Then you have old girlfriends reuniting. One's an actress in Hollywood. One is a well-to-do family woman from Texas. And they're all childhood friends. And the other one's from New York, and she's a lawyer. And they're getting together after all these years. So they have their subplot going on over here. Then you've got the weirdo who's Rico from Napoleon Dynamite. He's in his third season. Right. He's had some controversial things happen. He enters the fray. He's got a new girlfriend. And he lives up on the hill. Yeah. And then you've got what's the other storyline? Oh, some shady guy. You don't know what he does. He's got this girlfriend, and she's got this overbite and these teeth, who you end up loving her. She's everybody's favorite character.
So why
they've got their own thing going. Then you got the chick from the previous one that ends up shaking this guy down for $5 million. It's unbelievable. And you turn on White Lotus and you start laughing from the get-go. Because it's just like, what's going to happen?
Comedy?
Dark comedy, but with serious connotations. There's always death during the episodes. And it doesn't disappoint. It's good. I don't know if it's my favorite one. This is the third season. But it's
okay. So one of my favorite shows that you turned me on to was Tulsa King with Sly. Better than Tulsa King?
10 times better.
All right, I'll try it.
Tulsa King's only good. That's a B activity. Like that's that. A B level. It's only good because it's Sly, and I love Sly, but that's not A material out of Hollywood. Tulsa King is more in the breath of an Ozark.
You loved Ozark.
Real quality. Breaking Bad. It's a good show. It's a show where everybody's talking about. And I think HBO, no, it's not Netflix. It's HBO. HBO does a good job with it because Netflix, who selfishly I like because I can sit there and stream a whole season and I might be able to knock it out in 3 or 4 days.
With
White Lotus, you've got to wait till every Sunday and you're following. So they kind of roll it out slower.
Well, Tulsa King, when they came out, did they come out one?
I think they came out one at a time.
Yeah. All right. So I'll start watching White Lotus. Final Four. Did you watch any?
You know me, Rich. I'm Mr. Sweet 16.
Yes. Your brackets were tremendous this year.
No, I did watch last night. And the only thing, every year, and I'm talking to my buddies on the phone before, Boone's not going to watch the Final Four because he's not a sports fan, which is true.
Right.
But I did have to watch the final game. I'm a front runner. I always watch the championship. I watch the Super Bowl. You know, I'll watch the NBA finals, but I don't watch anything leading up. So I'm not in the,
you don't know who everybody is. You don't know the drama. You don't know the
backstory. Right, but the thing about it is, it's like everybody says, okay, well, this is going to be back and forth. It's going to come right down to the wire.
Right.
How can a 40-minute game, it always come to within one shot, 2 points.
Right.
That's like every baseball game. Does every baseball game have to go extra innings and you lose 5-4? Or sometimes you get blown out 7-1. Why does it always have to come down to the wire? And last night, same thing.
Came right down to the wire.
Couldn't get a shot off. That's amateur sports. Couldn't get a shot off. The pros can barely get a shot off. How can I trust an amateur to get a shot off?
I fell asleep because now I'm living on the East Coast. I fell asleep.
I'm kidding. The Gators. Gators take it home. I think the first time since 07. Look at me trying to be like a sport.
Yeah, no, this
like
is good.
I really follow. Yeah, back in, haven't done it since 07. Wow, what a great, you know, it wasn't the Duke this year, and it wasn't Auburn, who everybody expected, but it came down to the Gators and Houston, and the Gators came through because Houston couldn't get a shot off in the last 13 seconds. Wow.
Next year we're having a bracket challenge. We're going to make you fill out a bracket.
Okay.
Finally. Can I show off my shoes?
Show your shoes off.
You have to explain to everybody why I'm going to show my shoes off. Inspired by you at the All-Star game.
Yeah, Rich copied me as usual. My shoes, I had a friend of mine, Ellie, who's a friend of the girls. She's an artist, and she painted these shoes for me at the All-Star game of the Brett Boone podcast, and I ended up auctioning them off for good cause, and we did it in Seattle last year. So Rich, he wanted to show his patriotism. Ellie made a pair of shoes for him. They are pretty cool.
The Commonwealth of Virginia, where I'm now living. Pretty cool, right?
Pretty cool, yeah. Thank Ellie's you. All excited. She texted me, and she's like, oh, those are really cool. So
got a little awesome. Flag on the side. They're pretty awesome. So, Ellie, thank you very much. Is that it for the Boone podcast for today? I haven't worn it yet.
I don't know any other topics. What's going on? Atlanta Braves.
Braves playing slow. Giants. San Francisco Giants. Losi
Giants. Well, I'll tell you, that National League West is going to be good. I did not expect the Giants to be sitting where they are right now. I think they're 8-2. I expect the Dodgers. They're 9-3 to start.
Padres are in first.
Padres are good, too. This Jackson Merrill kid is really going to come into his own. I think he's going to be that third star. Him, Tatis, Machado, see how Bogarts does. I think Cronenworth's going to be better. Arise is probably going to win another batting title. That is loaded, that team. Dylan Cease, King at the top of that rotation. Hopefully Darvish comes back. Vasquez has done a good job. Pivetta was a great pickup. Former Boston Red Sox. Bullpen is tremendous for the Padres. Really good. I still think the Dodgers are the best team in baseball, but Padres in that division and off to a little bit of a slow start are the Arizona Diamondbacks. They're better than they were a year ago. Nobody, I didn't expect the San Francisco Giants to start out the way they did. If the Giants are this good,
right,
that'll be by far the best division in baseball, and it might be the first time we've ever seen four playoff teams come out of one division. That's far-fetched, a little early to start saying that, but man, this division's good.
You know, one of the things about the I'll leave you with this. One of the things about the Giants are the Giants had kept their three world championships by Bruce Bochy at arm's length. They took down all the photos off the walls. They hid away the World Series trophies. Everything in the clubhouse, nothing alluded to those championships. For whatever reason, Farhan Zaidi didn't want that around the ball club. And now that Buster Posey's running baseball ops, put them all back up. They're refocused. They're embracing those Bruce Bochy years. And it feels like Giants baseball again, where before it just didn't feel like Giants baseball within the organization.
Yeah, they're good. They can pitch.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. That's going to do it for the podcast for today. I'm Rich Herrera. That is Aaron Boone's brother, who has not played at Augusta, even though Aaron has.
Correct.
I'm just saying that in case Arnie's going to listen to this, and then he
can go. That's pretty good. That's pretty good close right there.
There you go. All right. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Hey, like and subscribe.
Oh, yeah. Like and subscribe. I forgot.